Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, Stephen. Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a long time, actually, since we chatted. We had a bit of an Easter break, I think.
We had a break, and we had lots of guests, which sort of precluded us having time to talk to each other. So it's lovely to be back just chatting with you.
Lovely to be back. And lovely to see you, because you missed GeoMob London this week, unfortunately, due to a very important scheduling conflict. So
there was a very important scheduling conflict, and as you sardonically pointed out, I might have been better off coming to GeoMob than watching Arsenal lose to Bayern Munich.
Such is life. This week we had a very nice GeoMob London back at UCL. So thank you to Mookie for making that possible once again. Lots of good talks, Stephen. You missed... it was interesting because, you know, one thing in London is over the last year or so, we've gotten more and more people kind of from local government attending from the various councils and things. And so two of the talks were related to were people or groups of people who work in local government talking about some of the tools and the challenges that they have. One very interesting talk from the people at from Tower Hamlets about trying to calculate the impact of Airbnb on the housing market.
I saw the subject matter, and I thought if ever there was a talk at GeoMob that I wish they'd videoed so that I could watch it afterwards, it was that one, because it sounded fascinating. Whether they actually achieved anything, you can tell me.
Well, we discussed this afterwards at the pub at some length. I mean, first of all, it's very difficult because obviously there are so many things happening at any given time. So many variables, things like COVID and things like that. But I don't know. I kind of took, and this was kind of one of the conclusions of the talk, is it difficult to draw conclusions. You know, as someone who had the good fortune of being a resident of Tower Hamlets back in 2006, I can assure all listeners that the housing market of Tower Hamlets was completely fucked up even back then, well before Airbnb. So that's not to say Airbnb doesn't contribute, but I think there are many, many factors at play. So
I just wonder if there's a common factor between the housing market in Tower Hamlets was screwed up because of gentrification, I imagine, back in 2006.
Yes, I mean, there were many things. This could be a whole episode.
but what I was going to say is that the same sort of motivations that bring a more affluent community into an area, buying up cheap property and turning the place into a trendy place, also will then pull in the Airbnb crowd.
Could be.
So there's a sort of correlation between gentrification and whether it's Airbnb or just generally house prices going up.
I
wish I'd been at the talk, because it's interesting stuff, even if you can't get conclusions out.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it would also be interesting to compare. It's not clear to me that the issues in Tower Hamlets are in any way unique to Tower Hamlets. Like, for example, you know, how council tax is assessed and things like that, which I think are, in my opinion, have a much bigger impact. You know, so for example, if your apartment is empty, I mean, truly empty, with no furniture in it, you don't pay council tax. So when I lived in the Barbican in London, on my hall, there were 10 apartments, of which 4 were empty.
Completely empty.
Completely empty. Because it was, you know, people just kind of bought it as an investment, and they, by having it empty, they didn't have to pay council tax. And they just avoid the stress of having a tenant or having to rent it out or whatever.
That's perverse.
The only word for it is perverse, Stephen. It is absolutely perverse.
I mean, they should be paying double the tax or something. Well,
exactly. So I was not ready to immediately point the sole finger of blame for the distortions in the market at Airbnb, which isn't to say Airbnb doesn't contribute. But anyway, that was a fascinating talk. We also had a talk from Nigel from Place, who we've had Denise here on the podcast. That was very cool because he talked about mapping. Place obviously maps these countries or regions in developing countries, and he actually
islands.
He went out into the field and he had pictures of being in Tuvalu and stuff, and so I talked with him about that a great deal afterwards. Fascinating, very cool.
No drone flying actually in the room though.
No drone flying in the room, actually. I'm not sure still the drones... the drones that they're using, I'm not sure how small they are. I think these are actually kind of bigger fixed-wing kind of things, so I don't think you could fly that in the room.
Yeah, they're quite big, and they assemble them when they get out there. You know, they come in a couple of big flight cases and have to be put together.
Exactly. What talks did we have? We had an interesting talk about generating realistic testing data, which this is a problem that we've also had at OpenCAD. So, Robert Edwards is his name. He had the problem that he wanted to generate a lot of realistic kind of journey data for different cities. And so he's built a whole kind of tool to kind of do that realistically, which has its own challenges. Hopefully that tool will be open source soon.
So,
and then finally, Stephen, go ahead if you have questions about that.
Then
I'll talk about the final.
Wait until you've done the finally, and then I've got a question for you. But do the finally.
Well, finally, I'm jumping around in the order. This wasn't the final talk, but Will Waters, he is actually one of the few people who has now spoken in multiple cities because he came to Barcelona a couple of years ago. But his talk in London was about this project he's working on called the Geospatial Index. And basically, he made the point that many people in geospatial are very underpaid versus the value that geospatial is generating. Okay, so if you look at the typical salary of a GIS specialist, it hasn't really kept pace with the cost of living and things over the years. And simultaneously with that, we see these companies, we see geospatial technology being employed more and more. And his idea is he wants to create some sort of fund, some sort of ETF that you can purchase, which will represent companies that are at the cutting edge of geospatial or heavily using and deploying geospatial. And the idea is that you as a geospatial employee, the value of geospatial is going to the shareholders of these companies, not to the employees. And so your best option is to become a shareholder by purchasing a fund like this or not. So it was thought provoking. I don't know if I buy all the hypotheses, but it was stimulating.
This guy well heard about capitalism?
Is he what? Is he?
Has he heard about capitalism?
Yes, he has. But that's the whole point, right? Is that?
All I'm saying is it's not just geo. It's
right.
It's workers in almost every industry, and even in the tech industries where, tech salaries are relatively high to average wages, it's still the shareholders who are extracting.
That is probably true, but Stephen, if we look at it, particularly at the big tech companies, the salaries have gone up quite, or let's say the total compensation, because it's very normal in at these big tech companies that you get some sort of stock compensation and whatever options or whatever. And that's really not the case for your average GIS technician. Right. So, there was a lot of food for thought in the talk, but then also at the pub afterwards. So it was stimulating.
So what I was going to say to you was that, before you tell me who won the Splash Maps prize,
Oh, Stephen, we should talk about this. Okay, go ahead.
I have to tell you that anybody who comes up with a title for their talk of "Do Androids Dream of Synthetic Sheep?" has got to win the prize, as far as I'm concerned. What a brilliant title. I'm not certain that there are many of our listeners who will pick up on the resonance of that title, but it is a brilliant title.
So, well, who won? Stephen, so, well, we didn't do the vote. We didn't do the vote for two reasons. So first, the first main reason was David couldn't make it, and so he wasn't there. So I did mention SlashDrafts as a sponsor, but we didn't actually do the vote. I don't know what to do about this, Stephen. Let's talk about this, because I should say I haven't discussed this yet with David or the Splash Maps team, but I have had some feedback that the Splash Maps, the voting for the best speaker, I guess probably independent of what the prize is, be it a Splash Map or something else, is very divisive.
I agree.
And this discourages people from speaking.
It certainly could do.
Particularly the feedback I've had.
New speakers.
And also new speakers, let's say inexperienced speakers, but also the fact that we do the vote publicly, you know, and for those listening at home who haven't attended, that we just do it by show of hands. And our intention was just to kind of have fun there doing that, not any. It's not about belittling, but very often it is the case that one or two of the speakers, you know, particularly captures the imagination of the crowd, and they get the majority of the votes. And then you have three or four talks who don't get many votes. Okay. And so the feedback I've had is that that's very discouraging, and, you know, it can be frustrating if you've put a lot of time into, you know, preparing your talk, and then So I don't know what to do about this, Stephen, because the last thing I want to do is discourage speakers. Obviously, the event doesn't happen with speakers, and it's absolutely not about.
It's not meant to humiliate anybody.
No, of course not. Of course not. That's absolutely the last thing we want to do. On the other hand, I always like the. I can say with truth in my heart, the whole goal of the best speaker contest is just to have a bit of fun, and also because, frankly, Splash Maps is a great sponsor and a great story, because, you know, it started via GeoMob and presenting at GeoMob, and one of the frustrations I have with GeoMob, Stephen, I have to say, is that I'm very grateful to all of our sponsors, because otherwise the event couldn't happen, or the post talk beers couldn't happen. But some of the sponsors really don't seize the opportunity, and they don't show up. They just kind of send us some money, you know, and, you know, thank you. We definitely appreciate that. But it's very cool to get a sponsor kind of involved in the event in a way that is fun, you know, and it makes it. So I'm very hesitant to lose the best speaker contest.
Okay, so here's a suggestion. There's nothing wrong with the best speaker prize. There's potentially something less than optimal about the current voting mechanism.
Yeah, so the idea was maybe we could do it some sort of anonymous online voting, where everyone uses their phone to vote. The only challenge with that is, obviously, it's someone needs to create this system, or we need to find this system, and it has to be organized or whatever. And
come on, Ed.
Yeah.
You use a simple Google form with the titles of the four speak talks and just choose one. Put a QR code up on the screen, nice and big, so that everyone can take a picture of the QR code and vote, and all you do is announce the winner. It's really not difficult.
Fantastic. So you're going to do this at the next event, Stephen?
I'm going to do this at the next event.
Everything's easy when you don't have to do it. Okay. Okay. And let's not forget rule one of GeoMob is minimizing the amount of work. Okay.
Okay.
So
right.
That's my only comment is, so I welcome you, you know, grabbing the bull by the horns here and doing it at the next event.
I'll do it at the next event. Let's see. Let's see how it works. I mean, theoretically, it's 5 minutes to knock up a form, make it public, and generate a QR code and put that into a slide.
Okay. I start the clock, Stephen. Let's see.
I said theoretically, Ed. Yeah. Look, let's give it a try. If it works, and if it is 5 minutes, and if people use, you know, and if people join in,
Yeah, okay, I agree. We should be able to find a way to solve this. So,
I mean,
but, you know, it's just yet another little thing we have to make work and figure out how to make it happen.
Well, or maybe I get even smarter and I delegate it to one of our trusty regulars.
Well, I'm more worried about a situation where it's like people say, oh, I don't have, the Wi-Fi's not working, they can't vote, I don't have reception, my vote didn't count. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to register for Google to use Google Forms because I'm a privacy person. All this kind of crap, Stephen, you know.
Well, my answer to that is so you don't vote. That's fine. If you want to organize the next one in a different way, using a different technology, you go ahead and do it. But, you know, I'm going to always choose the simplest thing that I know will work.
Well, we do have a form tool that we use for the sign up. Let me see if I can, I will spend 10 minutes trying to play with it and figure out if we can make this work. But
that's twice as long as I would have spent.
We will try it. But anyway, so yeah, that's a new development in GeoMob.
Right.
For those,
regardless of the fact that you didn't vote, I am going to award the Mappery Invisible Prize for the best title, because I didn't actually hear any of the presentations, to Robert Edwards for Do Androids Dream of Synthetic Sheep?
Well done. Well done. All right.
Well done, Robert. So what about Edinburgh?
Edinburgh, yes. So, unfortunately, obviously, neither of us was able to attend the Edinburgh event, but all accounts that I've had is that it was a great event. And this week in London, Edward Betts was there in attendance, and he did attend the Edinburgh event, and he said it was fantastic. So, well done to Gala for organizing. And big thank you to our sponsors there in Edinburgh. I am actually quite hopeful to go to the next one, which is going to be at the end of June. I believe right. June 25th. Sign up is open. I think we have one or two speakers already, but we haven't. There's always room for more. So please volunteer to speak. And I'm really looking forward to it. So.
We've got a lot of GeoMobs coming up.
We do. We have the next one is Lisbon in a couple weeks, I think yep. 3 weeks, which I also will unfortunately not be able to attend, but I highly recommend people go check it out. I had a great time there last October. Then we have a very full Barcelona event at the end of May. And
who's organizing Barcelona?
I'm organizing Barcelona. Together with my friends from some friends in Barcelona, right. From Rokuban. Then we have Berlin coming up, I think June 5th, and then Edinburgh, and then on the distant horizon is the next London event, which you will be taking the lead on, because unfortunately I'm not going to make it to that due to a summer holiday, but which will be part of London Data Week. So,
yep. And we've already got four speakers lined up.
Yes, we have four speakers, and I think I have one invite already out for the final speaker, which hopefully will get confirmed in the next week or two. So, yeah, it looks like a great event.
Yeah, and London Data Week was fantastic last year. There were great speakers. A hell of a lot of new people came along, so it was a great event. It was really good fun.
There's one other topic, Stephen, that came up this week in London, and it's related to the summer.
Well, it's more than one.
This summer in August is, of course, the 20th anniversary of the founding of OpenStreetMap, which it's hard to say exactly when it was founded. So the date that the community has chosen, I think it's the day that the OpenStreetMap.org domain was first registered, which I believe it's in early August. I don't remember the exact date. And that's what's celebrated as OpenStreetMap's birthday. And actually, this week in London, while we were setting up, Arnaud and I were there a bit early setting things up, and Mookie, of course, came in. And Mookie was obviously instrumental in this 20 years ago. It happened at UCL. You know, I think
Steve Coast was in his... It was in Mookie's department, wasn't it?
Yes, and I think Mookie, like, gave him a server or something, you know, because Steve came and was like, oh, you know, we need...
I've got this idea.
How can we do this? Exactly. So... But you know what blows my mind, Stephen? You know, that as far as I can tell, the UCL geography department doesn't herald this fact at all, that OpenStreetMap was kind of invented there. Because I asked Mookie, I was like, Mookie, what are you guys doing for the 20th anniversary? I mean, this seems like a monumental moment in the last 30 years. And, you know, they don't feature it at all. I thought it was a bit odd.
I agree.
And then...
Well, institutional memory isn't great.
It's what? It's...
Institutional memory isn't great. So yeah, the people who were there when it was started aren't there anymore, or they've moved on. You know, Mookie doesn't do a lot of geography anymore. He's doing citizen science, isn't he? Yeah, sure, that's true, but
I don't know. You know, I think it is something that the organization could be proud of. Anyway, so then at the pub afterwards, you know, I was talking with various illustrious members of the OpenStreetMap London community, and I asked them, you know, what are we... I'm sure there will be some kind of, you know, there's always a party or a pub meetup in August, but it's not clear to me that it's going to be anything more than the normal annual birthday party they do, which also seems like a missed opportunity given that, you know, it's the 20th anniversary. So maybe it will fall to us, Stephen. Maybe I was thinking what we'll do. We're not going to do a geomob in August because it's summer holidays, but maybe the next London geomob after that in September, I assume we haven't set the date yet, but we'll try to have an all kind of OpenStreetMap lineup to celebrate the 20th anniversary. So I don't know.
And maybe a special OpenStreetMap cocktail.
Maybe if you want the misplaced node or something, or I don't know. Anyway, so if anyone out there listening has ideas for OpenStreetMap related talks, get in touch and we'll try to stack the lineup so that we have 4 or 5 OpenStreetMap talks.
Or maybe if somebody comes to us with an idea, maybe we can do something even a bit bigger than that. I don't know what, but maybe.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. We could send an invite to His Royal Highness, Steve.
Steve Coast. I don't know if he makes it back to London much these days. I don't know. It's been a while since I've had contact with Steve, so but maybe we'll get him on the podcast. Maybe we'll also try to do a lineup on the podcast of people. Last summer, I did interview Andy Allen in August. We had an episode about kind of the early days of OpenStreetMap. So,
I mean, we've got as regulars at Geomob, we've got Andy and Harry and Grant.
Yeah, there are quite a few from way back in the day.
And Tom. You know, we've got quite a few of the people who were there, maybe not on day one, but certainly during year one.
Sure. So we'll have to see. I mean, when we have Mookie and we have, so I don't know, we can probably get some people together. So
Yeah. Somebody could even roll out that talk that I gave at State of the Map about sustainability of volunteer mapping. which was...
Well, it's made it 20 years, so I guess that's the proof.
Exactly, which just proves how wrong I was.
I remember that talk. Where was that? That was in Amsterdam, wasn't it? Or in...
I think that was Amsterdam, yeah, where I was talking about this whole thing about whether, as the volunteer, you know, it was a sort of middle-class, single male pursuit, and as people grew up, got married and had children, would they stop mapping? Or words, that's the quick summary of it. And the answer is I was completely wrong, so...
So, what else have you been up to, Stephen, besides giving out awards for best title? What's new at Mapperi these days?
Not a lot. We're on a very steady... Well, we had that feature in the...
In the New York Times, of course. Yeah, supplement. How did that come about?
Yeah, astonishingly, the Eve, the journalist... found the Mapperi website, reached out to me and said she wanted to, could we have a call? And we had a call, which she interviewed me for about an hour. We rambled on about loads of stuff about the use of maps as cultural icons, design icons, in furniture, in all sorts of ways. And then a chunk of that ended up in her article. And, you know, we had quite a big spike in visitors to the site and quite a lot of sign-ups for the weekly newsletter. It was great.
Yeah. Congrats.
And I've even got an idea with her, which we haven't really actioned yet, which is she interviewed a few other people about this. You know, the piece wasn't just about Mapperi. It was about the use of maps in design, furniture, art, and things like that. So... we had the idea of maybe getting a few of the other people she interviewed and doing a podcast episode, a conversation with them, but I haven't got that in place yet.
Sounds good.
But it would be a good one. So, yeah, it's been good. And I guess having two co-editors makes the whole thing so much easier. I mean, I know I've said it, but, you know, hobby projects that you do on your own are really hard, you know, because you have the highs and lows, you know. Yeah. And recently my personal energy levels have been low and I've been distracted by other things, as you can imagine. Yeah. And having Arno and Dan there who are sort of keeping things going is just fantastic. So, as always, my thanks to both of them. So what's been happening at Open Cage, Ed? Because I hear you just got into the 20th century.
you're alluding to our new tutorial videos that we have published on YouTube. I guess that's the biggest news, is that we just released some videos that kind of little 10-minute tutorial videos that people can use to learn about how to do some geocoding. One for reverse geocoding, one for forward geocoding. I don't know, Stephen. I'm so skeptical of the trend of watching videos to learn things. It's not my natural format at all. Particularly technical things like software. I much prefer to read things and look at the code rather than to sit there listening to a video or some drones on. I don't know. I just don't have the attention span for it.
I agree 100%. I can read much faster than I can watch. Exactly. I can listen faster than I can watch. But yeah, if there's a hierarchy, it's putting it on in print in front of me, talk to me, make me watch. You know, if I ever am trying to fix something, work out how to solve something, and I search for it, and there's some textual links, and then there's that row of YouTube videos, I have to say, I will always choose the text links before I'll try the videos.
Okay, same. But I am reliably informed that the younger generation does things a different way. So now we got some videos, one big success with the videos is we didn't make the videos ourselves. We paid our friend Rishi Rishi Mittal too, is the co-founder of a, or founder, I guess, of a company called Learneto, where he does kind of online technical courses. So he's kind of an expert at this type of thing. And he did a great job. The videos are really nice. So I know there are probably thousands of listeners out there who have been held back in doing their geocoding because they didn't want to read a text-based tutorial, and they've just been hoping that we would finally release a video. So that moment has arrived. They will be linked in the show notes, and you can watch our little 10-minute videos that and finally learn how to do it. So,
okay, well, yeah, maybe somebody will.
Maybe someone.
It's a strange thing, you know, because most tech companies feel that they've got to provide lots of how-to guides and
help to
new users. Quite rightly, you know, because you've got a new user of your software or application, you need to help them to get up to speed and get benefit from it quickly. But like you say, you know, with software, video is difficult. That said, I did use a help video, which was more the sort of screen, you know, the screencast thing where you're watching the person click and it's highlighting where he's clicking and what you're looking for and things like that. And it was quite useful.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
I think I'd still have preferred to see
it. Quite well. That was exactly why we thought it best to get an expert involved rather than, you know, people watching me sitting there cursing as I fumble about on the screen. And I'm happy with how they turned out. We will see if that leads to an avalanche of new customers or not. But you know, it's good that we have it. We do have quite a lot of other material. Actually, to be honest, at this stage, the bigger problem that we have is not that we have so many tutorials and guides and demo pages, and it's more how do we structure it
how so
that people actually find the thing they need, you know?
And not only that, but with all the different interfaces that you've got and code guides and stuff that you've got, when you introduce a new feature or a new capability,
well, that's also a nightmare.
How do you cascade that through all those?
Exactly. So that's a problem that we're been grappling with for a while. But what else have we been up to? I mean, the other big news, hopefully, I'm not sure it will happen by the time this episode is out, but there is some big news in the geocoding world in that the a few weeks ago, the newest version of Nominatum was released, which is one of the main geocoders that we use. It's the main OpenStreetMap geocoder. And we also fund the development of Nominatum and contribute to it. So anyway, version 4.4 was released, which quite a few improvements, but also is a fairly big architectural change in that previously Nominatum had been a mix of different programming languages, PHP and Python. And with this new version, it's purely Python. So,
right.
So hopefully we're in the process of kind of transitioning to that new version. And, you know, it's a tricky thing because we actually have a fairly significant volume of people using our services. So, you know, we've got to make sure it's a smooth transition, but that's the main thing on the agenda, I would say, for this week, this coming week.
Are you up to 1 billion hits a month yet?
API requests? Yes, we have crossed that delightful billion threshold. So, it's a lot. It adds up.
So, that's quite a lot.
It keeps us busy.
And you're doing all of that on Mark Tobias's laptop?
Right, that's right. Now, we had to upgrade to his laptop. Previously, we were doing it on his old Nokia phone. But, now that, as you can guess, there are quite a few servers involved in doing this. So.
I'm sure there are. You've been a little bit shy about mentioning another birthday, Ed.
Which is what?
10 years.
Oh right, yes. Well, we might do an episode about this, I think, but yes, we're coming up on 10 years of the OpenKH geocoding API. So OpenCage itself, we started originally with a different idea in 2013, also involving OpenStreetMap data and things like that, but it was in June of 2014 in which we've released the geocoder with an announcement at a talk given by our friend Gary Gale at State of the Map Europe in Karlsruhe. So, yes, 10 years we've been geocoding.
That's pretty fantastic. And to turn...
That's a lot of geocodes.
That's a lot of geocodes. It's also quite a milestone for a business to survive 10 years, to be profitable, to pay salaries, to good things like GeoMob.
When the project first started, of course, we were part of a different business of my former business in the UK, Loku. And Loku was acquired in 2015, and then we spun OpenCage out. And so it's been an independent business since, it'll be 9 years, which is also not minor. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. So happy birthday, OpenCage.
Thank you. Well, it's not yet, not till June. So, but maybe we'll do something to celebrate in June. Maybe we'll do an episode where we discuss the highs and lows, dramatic moments in geocoding, that kind of thing. So,
just one thing: nominate him.
Yeah.
Why is it called? Why that name?
Well, you'd have to talk with the person who invented it, which I believe nominate him. Has been around, now for like 14 or 15 years, obviously in many different versions. And the guy, I'd have to go have a look, but the guy who originally started the project, he stopped after a couple of years. And then it was kind of taken up by other people. And, as I said, we're now on version 4.4. So it's changed quite a bit.
A lot of time.
I believe in Latin, nominatum is name, or of the name, or, related to finding name. So the whole idea is, of course, that, you're putting in place names or addresses, and you're getting the information out. It's hard to find good names, Stephen, for technical projects at this stage. Every name has been taken, and often you see people... come up with a name that they think is new, and then it turns out another project already has that, and that creates confusion about, just in the OpenStreetMap world, you have so many different variants of projects that somehow use the awesome in the name, like Osmosis and all these different plays on OSM. So it gets weird. So.
Yeah, and... In general, it seems that people who name tech projects can't spell, and they have an aversion to vowels.
As I said, it's hard. It's hard. And, of course, we live in the reality now that you may have a good name, but the question is, is your name SEO compatible? Is it already... is there something else with that name and things like that? So there are a lot of factors. Also, can you get the domain? Not so easy.
Not so easy.
Naming things.
And is it offensive in another language?
Yeah. So, all right, Stephen, anything else we should cover? Okay. Or if we've kind of rambled on for a while here. So
we've rambled on for long enough. People need to go and do some work. They can't listen to us all morning, afternoon, evening.
Whatever. All right. Well, enjoy the weekend, and great to talk with you again. So
take care. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to the GeoMob podcast. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. Get in touch with us if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics we should cover. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly mailing list where we keep you informed about upcoming events. You can, of course, also follow us on Twitter where our handle is GeoMob. Thanks for listening and hope to see you at a GeoMob event soon.